Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 161 of the Classic Gaming Podcast. Today's date is May 11th, 2021. I'm Robert Ring, and with me is the Mr. J. Totaro.
Yes. What's going on? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Doing pretty good.
Man, so for once, even with having a guest on, the last episode did not go insanely long.
I know. I was when we got done, I was just like, okay, like, I'll take it. That
this is crazy. What it's supposed to be like. I watched Jurassic Park for the first time in a long time. Mm-hmm. Have you watched it recently?
Probably in the last 5 years, if I had to guess.
Okay, but so that's probably more recently than I had until now. I realized that my daughter had never seen it.
Okay.
I was like, oh, you gotta watch, we have to watch Jurassic Park. And it holds up real, like, I was surprised at how well it holds up.
Yeah, same. I think it's the way that they did the dinosaurs that, like, just really holds up a time. And the story is really simple, right? Like, it's a simple story that's executed well, which generally speaking holds up pretty well.
I think you're right. Nothing crazy insane to the story. And also, mm-hmm. It's got, like, lots of unique things, like even stuff that you don't, like, or that I never thought about. But, like, the scene where the car is in the tree and they're climbing down and it starts falling down and they got to race. Like, it's kind of like a chase scene, but it's like a new kind of chase scene that you haven't seen a million times before. Just like little things like that. I was like, damn, this movie, like, I was expecting to like it. I wasn't expecting to be disappointed or anything, but I was actually surprised at how good of a movie. I was like, damn, this is still a really, really awesome movie.
That scene, even though I know the end result of it, still scares me. Like, I remember the last time I watched it, I was like, man, I know what's going to happen, and I'm still kind of uncomfortable.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, when they're in the kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
And what's the other... They're obviously, like, when the T-Rex gets out, that was... Mm-hmm. That's a famous part. But yeah, still fucking scary.
Yeah, fantastic movie.
Great movie.
Good job.
Great movie. Great game, too, right?
Oh... That's a tough game right there. That's what we're talking about.
I remember you saying that, like, your toe hit some water or something and it instantly killed your character.
Yeah, that game is brutal. Like, there's one level in particular. I actually think it's like the second level. It's like the second level, but you're in these sewers and the jump you have to do requires so much precision. And if you're off by, like, if you don't jump at the right time, you hit your head, I think. And if you jump too early too late, then you fall in the water and it's a one shot. So it's just if you don't save state, you will have to do that part. Excuse me, you'll have to do the first level many times. And it's not, the game is not consistent. That was my biggest gripe with it, is it's not consistent how your character interacts with the world. So
that reminds, do you remember the part on Ninja Turtles where there was something, it sounds really fairly similar. There's a hole, do you remember how some of the levels would have like a second floor, but you could see the second floor from the first floor, and you got to go to one end of it and climb up the ladder and then go back.
The first one, right?
Huh?
You're talking about the very first one?
Yeah, the first one on Nintendo.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you remember how there was this one part there where there was a little gap? You're on the second floor and there's a little gap. It's exactly like one, like whatever the minimum size of their sprites were. It's kind of like, exactly one, like, probably like 16 pixels, 8 or 16, probably about 16 pixels wide. And, okay. But the floor you're walking on, the ceiling is directly above your head. Like, you are the exact height of the space you have. So every time you jump, you just bounce off the ceiling and fall through the hole. The way you're supposed to get
past, remember that.
The way you get past it is you just don't jump and you just walk over it.
Yeah, that came with some, like, it almost feels like Ninja Gaiden-esque, like just those really ridiculous jumps that you basically have to do over and over and over in order to understand how they're supposed to be done.
Yeah. It's a ridiculous game. I remember when I got that, I was so excited, and then I played it for a little bit. I was like, it's fucking hard.
That game is really hard.
Anyway.
Level's so terrifying. Ugh.
The dam? Is that what you said?
Yeah, the way to use the bombs.
Yeah.
That level was so stressful.
That's the one. I think I got past that once or twice when I was little, but then just died almost instantly at the part after it.
I kept dying in the open world too, which is so funny because you run over or whatever.
That was what happened to me too. I could be conflating two different parts, but I seem to remember getting past the dam like I said, maybe one time ever, maybe twice, and then in the overworld getting run over by one of the steamrollers or whatever.
Yep.
What a game,
right?
It's ridiculous. Anything new with you, or you want to go ahead and jump into news, Jay?
I'm good on my end. Nothing to share.
All good. Okay, then let's do it. So one thing I forgot to bring up last time is that, I guess this isn't strictly classic related, but it kind of is in a way. The PlayStation Store on PS3 and PS Vita, I guess what I would say is that has implications for future classic games, was going to shut down. And they announced that they were that it's going to shut down in June. And obviously people are upset about that because there are some, you know, PS Vita store exclusive games that were just going to be lost forever. Well, since then, the president and CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment basically said, sorry, we messed up. We're not going to do that. We won't do it after all. I'll give you, so his name is Jim Ryan. I'll give you the full quote. Recently, we notified players that PlayStation Store for PS3 and PS Vita devices was planned to end this summer. Upon further reflection, however, it's clear we made the wrong decision here. So today I'm happy to say that we will be keeping the PlayStation Store operational for PS3 and PS Vita devices. PSP commerce functionality will retire on July 2nd as planned. When we initially came to the decision to end purchasing support for PS3 and PS Vita, it was, I'm getting that crazy noise in your background. Really? Again. Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
It sounds like this time it sounds like a printer or something. There's like a scanner. Sounds like an office printer.
But I do show that my mic's stuck on, which doesn't make any sense.
Now it went away.
My microphone's like super sensitive. I don't know why.
Well, let's try it.
I'll set up a little bit more. Okay.
We'll just try it. We'll just deal with it. When we initially came to the decision to end purchasing support for PS3 and PS Vita, it was born out of a number of factors, including commerce support challenges for older devices and the ability for us to focus more of our resources on newer devices where a majority of our gamers are playing on. We see now that many of you are incredibly passionate about being able to continue purchasing classic games on PS3 and PS Vita for the foreseeable future, so I'm glad we were able to find a solution to continue operations. I'm glad that we can keep this piece of our history alive for gamers to enjoy while we continue to create cutting-edge new game worlds for PS4, PS5, and the next generation of VR. Nice little plug right there. Thank you for sharing your feedback with us. We're always listening and appreciate the support from our PlayStation community.
Is that, have people like confirmed, like, is that a pretty authentic statement? Because I mean, I'll be honest with you, if I was a big fan of a certain group, or excuse me, a developer, I would be really excited if that was their response, because we talk about this podcast all the time, like Blizzard's response to something like that would be like, ready, here it is.
It was what? What was the last thing you said? Oh. Yeah.
That's it. They just say nothing.
I didn't get the joke at first.
Yeah, I think that would be the extent of it. So that's
cool. that's his real response.
Cool.
So yeah, I mean, nothing to dislike there. I mean, obviously, I think the ideal situation would have been that they didn't plan to get rid of it in the first place. But at the same time, I mean, it's an eShop. Everyone knows at some point it's going to go away, right?
Yeah.
I think part of the problem this time around was along with just the general disappointment of, this is going away. It was announced pretty soon to when, like, the end of it was going to be. And also none of the developers like had a heads up. So evidently are still people working on PS Vita games. And, there were people that were like, yeah, we were just blindsided by this. We're in the middle of making a game and now we're kind of screwed.
That's so, kind of unfortunate.
Yeah. But I'm glad they've kind of reversed, the decision. But I mean, this also, even though it turned out okay for now, it brings up the problem of these, of eShops where game is exclusive, you know, to an eShop. One day there's not going to be a way to get that, you know, those games. And yeah. I don't know. I mean, obviously the best case is just to leave the shops up for as long as possible, but one day this is still going to go away. And it sucks for, I guess, for game preservation that these are just going to go away someday.
I think that, I mean, my dad's always a big person of fear, but he's always kind of had that fear with like iTunes as well, right? Like, you know, I know people who spent, you know, hundreds, if not over $1,000 on iTunes just buying music over the last 15 years. At a certain point, you know, if Apple goes out of business or they, for whatever reason, decide to step away from iTunes, what happens to that money? You don't own the property, right? You don't have the physical material of it. So I think there's partially that concern with anything you buy like that, where you don't get a physical copy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
also I think of MMOs, huh? Right? Like when you buy an MMO, you know, like you know that you can only play that as long as there are servers.
Right. Yeah.
So,
it's an issue, but I don't know if there's a good solution.
Besides, I don't think there is. It's just kind of interesting.
Yeah. Maybe give people more of a heads up when you do plan to, you know, cut these things out.
Especially the developers.
Yeah, especially developers. But yeah, just kind of highlights that it is a problem.
Cool.
Moving on. A bunch of re-releases and that kind of stuff have been announced over the past few weeks. Let's start with one. I think this was just today. It was either today or yesterday. They announced that Zombies Ate My Neighbors and its sequel, Ghoul Patrol, are getting re-released.
Is it for the PS Vita?
yeah, it's Switch, Steam, and GOG. They're coming out June 29th. I haven't played Zombies Ate My Neighbors, but it's supposed to be a really good game. I think it was a Super Nintendo game, right? I meant to look this up.
Offhand, actually, I think that sounds right.
I'm pretty sure. I never played it. Like I said, it was either Sega Genesis or Super Nintendo. It was both Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis. Okay, another one. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. There is evidently a remake in the works. This was reported by Jason Schreier. I don't think we have any details on it, just that they are working on a remake. I'm trying to remember. I don't know that I can think of a Star Wars game that they've actually had a remake of. So this is kind of interesting because I don't think they've done that with any Star Wars games before. Anyway, obviously, KOTOR is a very famous Star Wars RPG, so it's not really a surprise. I wonder what the extent of the remake is going to be. You know, I wonder if it's going to be like an actual remake made from the ground up with just kind of the same general story, but everything is redone, or if it's going to be more of a remaster. Sounds the wording was remake, so potentially could be really cool. I also wonder about the canonicity of this. Like, will this be canon to the new, I guess it would be canon to the new Star Wars stuff. I don't think there was anything in the original that would have been retconned by all the new canon. So I guess it could still work just as well. Super Huey 1 and 2 have been released on GOG. This is evidently a helicopter, like a helicopter shooting simulator, like a military helicopter simulator is what I'm trying to say. I got it out. It's a very old game, but so I don't know anything about it. I don't know if it holds up. I don't know if it was any good to begin with, but that's on GOG now. Unreleased Super Nintendo title Nightmare Busters is back in development for PC and consoles. This is according to Destructoid. So apparently there's this game called Nightmare Busters that was going to be released for Super Nintendo back in the day, and then they stopped production on it for whatever reason, and someone has picked it up, and they're going to... It's not... They're not, like, finishing it, because the graphics are completely modern graphics. It's more of like, oh, they've got this... the title, and they're going to kind of remake what the, you know, game would be if it had been made nowadays. I don't really know much about it. It looks kind of like a 2D action platformer. But, yeah, there's that. Another canceled game, Castlevania Resurrection. This was a Dreamcast Castlevania game. It's not getting an official release, but someone found the source code and has released it to the public. Or I say found. I think it was a guy who's just had it all along. Owner of the Sega Dreamcast Info Games Preservation website. Acquired the prototype build via auction. This is according to Destructoid also. And has generally decided to dump the ROM online. So you can find that now. Again, that's Castlevania Resurrection. I watched some gameplay footage, and it's definitely not complete. Like, there was a part where the person fell into a pit of lava. It's a 3D Castlevania. Fell into a pit of lava, and then they were just running around on top of the lava. So certainly not finished, but it's still cool for Castlevania fans to see this unreleased game. Flashback is getting a sequel. You remember Flashback? It came out in 1992. It was like the kind of like a puzzle platformer with a really good animation. You'd know it if you saw it.
Yeah, I'm Googling right now.
Now somebody's making a sequel to that one. Kind of, I guess it's, I mean, yeah, it's random, but I guess there's also, it's not like crazy random. There's no reason not to. It was a good game back in the day. Why not make a sequel, right?
Yeah.
You know how it goes. You know how it is.
Well, it's easy money, right?
Well, that too.
Kidding.
You said you have something to talk about. Was yours Blizzard related?
Yeah, it was. What did Blizzard do? So Blizzard, the Burning Crusade, was the first expansion for World of Warcraft. It came out a long time ago. It doesn't matter. So a lot of people have been anticipating this summer that they were going to release the expansion for it. We were all waiting for what's called the pre-patch.
We're still having some mic problems. You sound really? Like kind of muffled and kind of clipping. Like, I think you might be a little too close now.
I am not that close. Hold on one second. Let me try this. Is that any better?
So far, so good.
I don't understand what that is. I don't know what's going on with that. I didn't do anything different to Discord. So I don't know what it is.
Did you abuse your mic?
No, never. I love this microphone. I've had this microphone for a long time.
Did you abuse it out of love?
I can't admit to that on the podcast.
Okay.
So, before they do a major release for an expansion, they do what's called the pre-patch. It's a pre-patch, right? It's a patch before.
We're talking about and WoW. Essentially,
yeah. So people are anticipating the pre-patch because what is happening is a new class and new race is becoming available. So what people wanted to do during the pre-patch was level the character from the base level up to the level prior to the expansion so that they could play in the new content. So realistically, to level the character to max level, it takes on average roughly about 200 hours, right? And in the pre-patch, it gets corrected a little bit to somewhere probably close to, like, if we're being friendly, probably like 120 hours. Okay. So it's still a really big time sink. So if you think if you need to spend 120 hours leveling, if you did that in a month, right, you'd have to play for 4 hours a day, which is a lot, right? If you think about that, yeah. That's an extensive amount of time.
It's a lot.
So people were like estimating like, well, maybe they'll give us 2 months because I need to play for 2 hours a day. That's somewhat feasible, right? If, especially for sweaty nerds who play 10 hours a day on the weekend, you know, they could level it out and figure it out, right? So Blizzard accidentally leaked earlier this week or late last week the release date. It was 6/1. And they were like, hey, a bunch of people took screenshots of it all over the internet within minutes. And people were speculating that maybe that was the pre-patch. They're going to do it 6/1. Or maybe it was just like a placeholder and they would fix it later on. Nope. They announced earlier this week that the pre-patch is going to be May 18th, aka next Tuesday. And people will have 2 fucking weeks to level from 1 to 60. Mm-hmm. 120 hours in 2 weeks.
Why is it bad if you don't level?
Because you're going to be so far behind the curve. I mean, everybody's going to go into the new content. They're going to be leveling and doing dungeons. WoW is one of those things where if you're not in the main crowd, you miss out on a lot of things. You miss out on a lot of exciting things. And it's kind of hard to explain, but without going super far in depth, it changes the game a lot if you are not a part of the initial pack that's moving through it. So for me, I don't fucking care because I wasn't going to do it to begin with, but it's kind of shitty of them. Like it's just so last minute, so rushed. And the anticipation or people are making the speculation. It's because the current iteration of the retail or the current level of WoW is doing so poorly and they are failing to put out content for it fast enough to keep the player base around. So they're basically just leveraging this as an avenue to keep subscriptions going while they finish content for the current iteration of WoW. Which is probably true. I mean, that's from a strategy perspective, that makes a lot of sense. How fucking ever, they decided to do something that I anticipated, and I called this a long time ago. They decided to, monetize the first expansion to WoW in a really, really greedy fashion and in a very lazy fashion.
Jay, I'm sorry. It sounds like you're deep throating the mic.
I'm not even that close to it. Hold on, let me try.
Can you turn your gain down? Can you turn the gain down or something? Do you have gain?
I don't have a game on.
You don't? No, gain.
What is gain?
Gain is like how strongly it picks up stuff. Do you have a gain control?
No, okay, I don't.
Never mind.
Let me see. Try to see if there's anything else I can do. I don't. There's no other settings in here. I don't know what's going on with it. Yeah, it says automatic gain control.
Is that maybe? Is it on?
Yeah, it's on.
Okay. I don't know.
If there's anything else? I don't know what's going on with it. Like, I have not changed anything in Discord since. Maybe it's because we're in a call and we're not in regular Discord. Is it possible?
Let's try to move over.
Okay. I'll see you over there.
Okay. I can't find our Discord. Here it is. I couldn't find it at first.
Okay.
I don't know if it did any good though.
Does it still sound the same?
Right now you sound okay.
That's weird. I wonder what it is. Let me try closing all my other applications.
If you could just stand on the opposite side of your room for the whole
time. It's that bad. I can move the microphone further away.
I'm exaggerating, but I mean, like, yeah, if you can
move
it away,
further away. Yeah, 100%.
Now it's really,
you tell me to move it closer.
Well, I know, because now it's really echoey, but it's better than how it did sound.
How's that?
That's pretty good.
Okay. I'll
if you can like maintain this exact distance and volume for the whole episode, then that'd be great.
I can try.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry.
No, it's all good. So what they did in order to try and profit off of again, this is a re-release of content that they've already fucking done, and the community asked them explicitly, please don't try to over-monetize it and ruin the game. So I wouldn't say they ruined the game, but they're definitely on the verge of damaging some of the integrity of it. So what they did is, and I think that if the dollar amounts are off by a little bit, I'm sorry, I don't have it up in front of me because I just was so pissed about reading about this, but So you can basically purchase on your account, you can pay, I think it's $40 to have a character boosted to level 58, which is basically the level you want to be going into the new content.
You pay
so
how
you
much?
Can do once, $40.
Ugh.
Right. So $40 fucking dollars. You can't do it for the class and races that I was talking about before. So people are like, oh, why don't the people who don't have time to level just buy a character boost? You can't do that. Those have restrictions in place where you can't boost them. So there's that. They added a deluxe version. Now here's the fucking crazy thing. You don't have to buy the game, right? It is free, right? It is free. You just have to pay $15 a month. The expansion is also free because Blizzard cannot sell it legally. They tried.
Yeah, I kind of remember.
Those told them to fuck off because you can't sell something that people already have on their accounts, right? I already own Burning Crusade, so they can't sell me the Burning Crusade again. But what they can fucking sell...
Didn't stop them with Warcraft 3.
That is true. That is actually very true. Let's not go there. anyways, so they're selling a deluxe version of Burning Crusade, right? So what the fuck would a deluxe version of a free game be? So you get the character boost, okay, so $40 value. You get 30-day game time, so roughly $15. That puts us at $55. You get a mount in-game and some other minor bullshit as a part of it. $70.
Whoa.
That's more than a AAA title. They're charging $70 for re-released content. $70.
That's steep.
That's ridiculous. Like, that's insane. Like, they actually think that people are fucking... Oh, I forgot to say the worst part.
Uh-oh.
So here's the crazy thing. So on top of all of that mound of bullshit, if you... So right now, the game is in Classic, right? It's in the original state that it was in. When Burning Crusade... When the pre-patch hits in a week here, when you log in, you're going to get prompted with a window that says, hey, do you want to transfer... Do you want your character to move on to the Burning Crusade? You can say, yeah. Oh, and they'll say, but do you want to keep it in Classic? And you're like, well, fuck it. I'll probably keep it in Classic as well, right? Because you might want to go back and play the original version of WoW. Well, only one of them is free. If you want to do both of them, you have to pay Blizzard an additional $35 in order to port your character to a database where your character already exists.
Okay.
They're not even trying anymore. Like, before, they were at least wearing somewhat of a mask, like one of those smiling faces, like Guy Fawkes masks or something. Now they're just fucking Jason running down your fucking wallet. Like, it's crazy to me. Like, they don't even care about the greed that they show at all. It's just appalling. Like, it's just...
Damn.
It is so crazy to me. And the crazy part is, so people are livid, right? So people are on the internet, of course, they're bitching and moaning, understandably. Yeah. I totally agree with them. Blizzard's the most greedy fucks. But the people defending Blizzard to me are some of the most brain-dead fucking morons I've ever seen. There are so many people defending them, like saying how this costs them resources and different things. It's like, they just laid off 200 people. It's just crazy to me. And the worst part is, so Blizzard, during their layoffs, they laid off their entire esports division, which included WoW. So WoW esports division is basically, at this point, or at least it's on hiatus. They said they're going to try and do something with it, which they can lick my balls. Like, it just doesn't even make sense.
You didn't even use the ligma. You just went straight for the actual sentence on that one.
You like that?
Yeah.
So there's a really famous streamer for anybody who follows WoW. His name's Asmongold. He streams a lot. He did his own tournament. He did an invitational. And he basically ran it with just some really simple people and executed it substantially better than most Blizzard tournaments. Yeah. And it's just crazy to me that Blizzard was making such a big deal out of, you know, how much money they were saving and not using on esports. And then somebody's just like, ah, fuck it. I'm going to do my own tournament. I'll fund the whole thing myself. Like, I'll hire people. And it's just... It's just crazy, man. Blizzard is just... It's just mortifying, man. $70 for a deluxe version of a game you already fucking sold us 15 years ago.
Is the mount badass?
Who cares? Whenever you see these mounts... no, seriously. In MMOs, generally speaking, in my group of friends and most people I talk to, if you see somebody using one of those purchased mounts, there are mounts in WoW that are, you know, $20, $30, $40. You berate those people, make fun of them, because it's just such a...
Really? That's 100%. Not how it is in Final Fantasy.
It's because it's not acquired through means of spending a lot of time in the game, farming something, or being really good at PvP and getting a mount, or doing a bunch of dungeons to acquire something. You pulled out your wallet in order to glamorize your character. Like, it's just such a boring achievement. Like, it just, I don't know. There's a mount you get if you buy 6 months of game time, and it's just like, people who do it every single time, we make fun of them because it's just like such a fucking boring thing. There's so many cool mounts in the game, and to use this mount that is just tainted with a dollar sign, it's just, I don't know, it's kind of pathetic in my opinion. But teach their own. If you enjoy it, I don't like you, but you know, that's you. I'm just kidding. Maybe I'm not.
But you don't have to be liked by Jay.
That's true. Most people. Well, I like most people.
Speaking of mounts, yeah. I got a new one in Final Fantasy. I didn't pay for it. I had to grind to get it, but I got the fucking T-Rex from Final Fantasy 12 that kills you in 2 seconds. Cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a good one. Anything else?
No, I think you're good otherwise.
Oh, Strong Museum Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
The inductees. So I feel like I've read this list a million times. Sorry for everyone, but just for the sake of understanding what made it and what didn't. The Strong Museum's World Video Game Hall of Fame. Their induction was a week ago for the new Hall of Fame games. They picked 4 games. They had 10 nominees. The 10 nominees this time were Animal Crossing, Call of Duty, Farmville, FIFA International Soccer, Guitar Hero, Mattel Football, which was the 1977 handheld, Microsoft Flight Simulator, Pole Position, Portal, StarCraft, Tron, and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? The ones that made it were Animal Crossing, Microsoft Flight Simulator, StarCraft, and Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, I saw some of the original Blizzard staff tweeting about the StarCraft one, you know, like saying...
Oh,
like,
cool, yeah.
They're pretty excited about that. So Animal Crossing is an obvious one. StarCraft is an obvious one. Yep. So which ones were we surprised didn't make it through?
The only one... Well, I wouldn't say too surprised because all of these were good ones and some good ones had to not make it. The two that were on my list that did not make it were Call of Duty and Guitar Hero. But I'm not surprised. I'm not necessarily surprised that those didn't beat out the ones that did make it.
Sure,
I think that makes sense. Really good list this time.
I had StarCraft, Animal Crossing, Flight Simulator, Guitar Hero, and Portal were my 5. So three of my 5 made it through. Actually, yeah, 1, 2, and 3 made it in.
Yeah, your list and mine was exactly the same, except instead of Portal, I had Call of Duty.
Okay.
All right, well, let's talk about the games that we've been playing. Maybe I'll go first, if that's cool with you.
How many games do you have?
3? Yeah.
Can you do one, and then I'll do one?
Yeah.
And then, based on time, I may talk about a second one, just depending on how long we're.
Okay, then I'll do... that means I shouldn't do my super short one first, then?
I'll probably do a chunky boy first, yeah.
Chunker? Okay. You pick. I'll let you pick, Jay. Star Wars Rebel Assault or Blade Runner?
Ooh, I want to hear Rebel Assault because I played that not too long ago myself.
Rebel Assault? I don't think you played... Mm-hmm. Are you sure?
I played Shadows of the Empire. I'm sorry.
I was just about to say, you always get confused about Star Wars games.
Listen, there's a million of them and most of them are questionable, so...
Okay, I played Rebel Assault. It came out in 1993. This was a CD-ROM game for PC. Evidently, it also came out on... 3DO and Sega Genesis? How's that? I have to look into that later. But this was Rebel Assault. It is an on-rails shooter. Okay? It is known for being very difficult and having bad controls. And I had this game when it came out. This is like the quintessential CD-ROM style game, just the way it looks. There's no FMV, but everything has this kind of realistic look, but also super, super grainy at the same time. Just kind of how you expect, huh? Yeah. Okay.
I'm looking at pictures right now.
Yeah. Just how you expect old CD-ROM games to be. So it's like, if you want to see what a CD-ROM game looked like back in 1993, just pop in Rebel Assault and you've got it. So as I said, it's a rail shooter. The idea is you are a rookie joining the Rebel Alliance and the story starts right before the beginning of A New Hope, and it starts you off with like a few training missions. Now the training missions are on a secret Tatooine rebel base, which I don't know how up on your Star Wars lore you are, Jay, but there's definitely no talk ever of a rebel base being on Tatooine, nor would that make any sense whatsoever. So that's kind of one of those things where they just said, oh, let's put on Tatooine because everybody wants to, you know, be on Tatooine because that's where Luke's from. So that part is dumb that they said that there's a rebel base there. But anyway, The first level has you flying civilian ships. It's the T... Oh, gosh. I feel like I'm not a Star Wars nerd anymore. It's T-16? Skyhopper? I think that's right. Look this up.
Wrong person, sorry.
Hold on. T-16 Skyhopper. Yeah, T-16 Skyhopper. That's exactly right. Phew, I was doubting myself for a second. You are in a T-16 Skyhopper on the first mission. Again, this is just a civilian craft, and it's for training. And what you're doing is flying, you're just flying through a canyon. And you fly through the canyon, and then after that you fly kind of, it kind of switches to an overhead view where you're also flying through canyons and shooting down some target drones. And that's the first level. They're just like, oh yeah, let's make sure you know just how to fucking fly and you're not just a dumbass. So, first level, it took me probably 6 tries to get through it without dying. You start flying, and the controls are just insane. So I was playing with the joystick, okay? It's how it's meant to be played. You tilt the joystick just the tiniest bit, and you go flying. I'm sorry, this game has possibly the worst controls out of any game I've ever played. Jeez. And so it's a rail, as I said, it's a rail shooter, but you have control over, you have like control over fine details of where you are. So your point of view is from behind the ship that you're flying. There are some where it's it, where the point of view is within the ship, but on this level, you are behind your ship. And of course, the camera goes in a fixed way every time. You can't control where the camera is, but you control like where within the camera's field of view where your ship is. So it makes it very awkward because the camera will turn, and that might cause you, that like has a little bit of influence on the direction you're going, but not a whole lot. And so you also, like, the camera's turning the ship and you're turning the ship at the same time. So with those, like, two different forces acting on the ship at once, along with the controls already being bad, it makes it damn near impossible to control the ship. If you're turning one way, and then you start turning back the other way, and then the camera goes the same way, it just launches you off to the side. It is nuts, like, how bad the controls are. So not only is it hard to just very gently like turn a little bit here and there, but like you also have the camera shoving you in this direction and that all over the place. So just staying in the middle of a canyon through various turns and stuff is very difficult to do until you really, really get a good handle on just like how wonky everything is. So after you get through the first level, then you're in an A-wing. And you're in an asteroid field. And this one, you are, it is first-person view. This level is much easier. The second level is much easier. You just have to dodge asteroids, and then there are some, like, giant ice chunk asteroids, and you're supposed to shoot those. As long as you don't get hit by anything, you're fine. There's not walls on each side of you, like on the canyon level, so it's not nearly as hard to stay alive on this one. Then... the third level, you're in the A-Wing again, and I think this one is back to how the first one was, if I remember correctly, where you're behind, it's like a kind of an over-the-shoulder view of your A-Wing. And it's another one, also just like the first level, where you're not in a canyon, but it kind of is a canyon-like area. Might as well be a canyon, but there's also these kind of like pillars, these big like crystalline pillars that have fallen over and stuff, and you have to fly under them and go over them and this kind of stuff. Again, super hard. It's just really, really, really difficult to get careful enough control over the ship without just swinging yourself all the way to the left or right to try to go under things and dodge stuff and stay within the walls without hitting the edges. But after a few tries, it's doable. I got past this level eventually. The fourth level is an attack on a Star Destroyer. And I remembered this one. I'm pretty sure when I was little, this was as far as I ever got. There's a Star Destroyer attacking your secret rebel base on Tatooine. And they're launching everybody to go out and attack it. But it's just, here's another thing that canon-wise really doesn't make sense. It's just you in your X-Wing versus a Star Destroyer. which, if you know anything about Star Wars, that's a ridiculous prospect, but that's what it is. That's what it is in this game. You versus Star Destroyer, you're supposed to take it out. So what you do is, the way the rails path takes you is you fly along one side of the Star Destroyer, and there's all these turrets on the side of it shooting at you. You can't really do anything to dodge them. All you can do is shoot them out before they're able to fire at you. So you just, and you might not be able to get all of them, and you don't have to get all of them, at least not on the first loop, but you're just trying to wipe out as many as you can. So you try to wipe out as many as you can, then you come out the other end, and then you kind of go into open space for a second, and a few TIE fighters come at you, and it's kind of the same thing. There's not really any dodging. You just have to shoot them down before they're able to shoot you. Then it goes toward the shield generators on the Star Destroyer, and you just have to wail on them as much as possible with your lasers. And that's how you eventually destroy it. Once you shoot the shield generators enough, then the whole thing just explodes. Well, no. Sorry, it doesn't explode. Then you do like a torpedo run on the Star Destroyer. But I'm getting ahead of myself. It takes you to the shield generators. You shoot them. You just like point at them and click as fast as you can on the joystick to shoot them as much as you can. Then it goes over the edge. You go out into open space again, shoot some more TIE fighters. Then you go along the other side of the Star Destroyer. This side also has a bunch of laser turrets. Shoot them down as many as you can. Pop out into open space, shoot TIE fighters. Then start all the way back at the beginning on the first side of the Star Destroyer, going alongside and shooting down turrets. And it does, so like if you destroy turrets the first time, they stay destroyed. So the turrets don't respawn. So that's good. Makes it a lot easier the second time around. By the end of your second loop, you'll probably have destroyed all of the turrets. If not, maybe you just like missed one or two. But it keeps doing this loop over and over and over. And then, eventually you get to the shield generators. You shoot on them as much as you can, trying to blow them up. And it takes like probably about four loops through the whole entire thing to kill it. But it gets so tedious because when you're going down the side of the Star Destroyer where the turrets were, well, once you've destroyed them, then when you get to that part, there's just nothing to do. So you just literally sit there for 30, 45 seconds and wait until you pop out the other side. Then you got to shoot the TIE fighters. Then you get to shoot the shield generators again, then shoot more TIE fighters. Then you get back to the other side. Turrets are all gone probably. So then you just sit there and wait again. So like, not only is the whole thing just repetitive because you're doing a loop over and over again, but on many parts of the loop, or on a couple parts of the loop, there's nothing to do because you will have destroyed the turrets, you know, probably by the end of the second loop. Eventually, you shoot the shield generators enough that you destroy them. And then it's like, all right, now you got to basically fly straight head on and shoot it with the torpedo to take it down. And it's back to holy shit controls once again. It's so hard to keep the target centered on the Star Destroyer so that you can shoot the torpedo on it. Because you have to like hold it there and let it lock on for a few seconds. And I couldn't do it. Luckily, that it's not necessary, because if you don't do it, then your like trainer or whoever says like, I'll take care of it if you're not able to. And then they shoot it down for you and you still pass the mission anyways. So I got past that one. And then I got to the final mission that I was able to get to, which is kind of just insanity. It takes you back to the very first canyon level, but you're chasing three TIE fighters through the canyon. And it is impossible to navigate and aim at the TIE fighters at the same time, because they're pretty far ahead of you. So they're very small on your screen. So it is very, very difficult to get an aim on them. I was usually able to, right at the start is the easiest time to shoot them down. Right when you first start off, most of the time I could shoot down two of the three within the first like 5 seconds. And then once you start turning through corners and stuff like that, it's impossible. I just shot nonstop while trying to, you know, like swing side to side, basically like flinging all over the place, trying to avoid canyon walls. And I could not hit the last TIE fighter for the life of me. It is, and that was the mission I couldn't get. I could never get past this one because I could never get the damn third TIE fighter. It's especially for a game whose sole purpose is to like have you be aiming at things to shoot them. It was and controlling a spacecraft, the controls are insanely terrible. Like I said, without exaggerating, possibly the worst controls I've ever had in a video game.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Not very good. And I remembered it not being great. I remembered it being difficult, but I don't know what made me in the mood for it all of a sudden, but I was like, you know what? I really want to give this one a try. I think it was just nostalgia. I was like, I just want to see what it's like, if it's still exactly how I thought. And I also just kind of felt like playing a cheesy CD-ROM style game.
Sure.
So yeah, that did it. I got my fill, you know, played it for about probably an hour or so. And that's definitely all I cared for.
Hey, that was a lot to talk about for only playing an hour.
Yeah, I talked about it for just about the same amount of time, right?
Wasn't what I meant, but sure, we'll go with that.
Yeah, so it's not too good, unfortunately. All right, Jay, you wanted to go next, right?
Sure. Yeah, we can kind of break it up and see how we're doing on pacing. Yeah. Okay. So the first game I played for the podcast is really two parts. But so I went camping a couple weeks ago, and whenever I go camping, Hunter and I always play a Pokemon game together. And we'll generally do what's called a Nuzlocke. And I know I've talked about this in podcasts before, but for those who don't know what a Nuzlocke is, essentially Pokemon games are generally considered to be pretty easy at this point, just because it's a really simple procedure, right? So you start playing the game, you get your Pokemon, you level them up, you go to the gym, you kill the gym, and you rinse and repeat that to the end. That's the general path to go through. And for the most part, it's pretty darn easy as long as you don't do anything, you know, ridiculously dumb. So what a Nuzlocke is it allows you to add some additional rules to it to make it a little bit more challenging and a little bit more interesting. But this time we also added in what's called a randomizer. And so we did this for Pokemon Crystal. And Pokemon Crystal is basically the combined versions of Gold and Silver, which are probably my favorite iterations of Pokemon, if I had to say. We did it initially with Leaf Green, which is like a re-release of one of the original Pokemon games. But we spent a lot more time playing Crystal. And so
Crystal is the one?
Yeah, yeah. So Crystal is the one we played. It's a combination of Silver and Gold.
Gotcha.
So what we did, so the basic rules we put in place using Nuzlocke is if a Pokemon dies, you have to get rid of it. That's the first rule, which obviously creates some pretty big challenges because if you've never played a Pokemon game before, you can lose Pokemon to some really shitty stuff. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. The second rule is every area that you go to where you can catch Pokemon, whatever the first Pokemon you encounter is, that is the only Pokemon you can catch. So if you walk into an area and you find a Weedle, guess what? You can only catch a Weedle. If you get a duplicate, bad? Meaning you already have one, what was that?
Is Weedle bad?
Yeah, Weedle's bad.
Okay.
It turns into Beedrill. But anyways, so he's not bad early on, but later on he's just kind of dog do. So if you already have the Pokemon, then you can go again and find a different Pokemon, right? So there is some strategy to try and capturing as many Pokemon as you can. With, you know, obviously you can only do one per area. So along the way, because, you know, if you forego a Pokemon, guess what? You might encounter that Pokemon later and beat yourself up because now you've had two chances where you have to catch it and you could have just caught it the first time and then gotten a reroll the second time. So that's the first thing that we did. So that already creates some fun to it. I used to do Nuzlocke runs when I was a lot younger. I haven't done them in a while because realistically it's a nice addition, but it's also still kind of easy for the most part. You know, the game is, the reason is it's generally in the early stages of the game, you can only catch, we'll say weaker, more simple Pokemon. And then later on you can catch better Pokemon. So it basically still ramps up an equal pacing. You know, the gym leaders generally are ramped up in equivalent fashion. So ultimately the game doesn't get that much harder, we'll say.
Okay.
So we added the randomizer into it. And the randomizer is really cool. It's a whole community thing that people have created. It's basically a program where you take the ROM, you can randomize certain elements. It prints out an actual ROM that has the emulations on it. And then what I did is I dispersed it to everybody who was playing. There was like four or five of us that were playing through it. And so what we did is you can randomize the starter Pokemon, which we did. You can randomize the TMs, which are called technical machines, I think. It's basically these little capsules you get that allow you to teach your Pokemon different abilities. And so they are one-time use. So generally throughout the game, you get them, you can teach them to your Pokemon, but it's a one-time use type thing. Well, we randomize those. So from going from being like really early game ones, you could get some freaking nutty ones very early on. But do you want to risk giving it to a Pokemon? Because if that Pokemon dies, guess what? You lose the Pokemon and you lose that TM. So there's some risk involved there. We also randomize the items that you find throughout the world. So you could find like a super potion right off the bat, which is like a high level item. You could also find some really cool, we'll call it equipment. It's basically items that the Pokemon can hold that amplify their abilities or other positive effects. We also randomized all of the Pokemon in the world, as well as all the trainers' Pokemon. So when you fight people, they could have crazy, absolute batshit stuff. Now, we just still balanced it, so it's not like, you know, you run into the first battle and the guy has like a tier 3 Pokemon. There's a setting that's like of equivalent value, but still random, which is cool, because okay. It makes it a little more reasonable. But also, we did it for the gyms, and the gyms were insane. So I will tell you, I did 2 full runs. I played through it the first time, and I got... So if you lose all your Pokemon, if you lose a couple Pokemon, you're probably fucked. Because you... So in Pokemon games, you only get money from fighting other trainers. There's a limited number of trainers that are in the world. So if you basically blow through all your money and you can't beat any more trainers, you have no more money.
Oh, wow.
So it requires you to grind endlessly in order to get back up, and it's just not worth it. Also, if you lose a lot of good Pokemon and you're only finding bad Pokemon and you can only catch a certain number of Pokemon, you get put in a really shitty spot. So my first run, I ended up wiping at what's called the Elite Four. It's after you do the initial clearing of all the gyms, you go to like a midway boss point, which is these five. There's five. I know it's stupid, but there are these five really badass trainers, and they have extremely high level Pokemon. They're generally very strong and blah, 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 blah. Well, I got destroyed by them. So I was the furthest one in, so at that point we decided to do a reroll, and we re-randomized it because there were some bullshit things that happened through the run, and we did it again, and I played it nonstop for, I don't even know how long, I probably spent 15 hours playing Pokemon over like 2 or 3 days of just leveling Pokemon and trying to capture things. I didn't lose a Pokemon the second run for the longest time, and then I lost 5 Pokemon in a single day, and I was pissed. I was super pissed because I kept losing to the dumbest shit. The stuff I kept losing Pokemon to was self-destruct, which self-destruct can Ligma. Oh my god, self-destruct can suck my ass. It's so ridiculous. So this is the game. This is the game's middle finger throughout the entire thing. You will fight a trainer. They have an Electrode, which is like the little Pokeball-looking Pokemon. That's a weird sentence, but... And you encounter it, and what does it do on its first fucking turn? It just self-destructs and kills your Pokemon. And it's like, bro, you don't win if you do that. Like, I still win, because you had a Pokemon. I still have 5 Pokemon left. You just happen to kill my Pokemon, which now I have to get rid of. There's other Pokemon throughout the game that kept doing it to me, which was insane. There's also an ability, they kept doing this thing. I don't remember what the exact name of it is, but it's basically like they put up this shield, and if you hit the shield, it does no damage to the Pokemon, and then they just do double damage for the amount of damage you did to them back. So if you crit them, or if you use something that's super effective against them, they basically turn it right back around, they do the reverse Uno card, and slap you in the face and kill your Pokemon. That happened a bunch of times. There's also this Pokemon that decides that it's just going to kill itself, and it's going to take you with it. It's kind of like self-destruct, but it's just as bad. And it was like, are you kidding me? So, it was really fun. The actual Nuzlocke itself was great. Hunter and I had a lot of fun. You know, I would just randomly get blown up in text throughout the day, like, this stupid fucking trainer killed 3 of my Pokemon. And I'm just over there like, yeah, they're falling behind. Like, you know, it's kind of a race too, right? There's 4 or 5 of us doing it. And it was really fun to explore the gyms, because as you go through the gyms, it's like, if you go into the gyms too early, in a lot of cases, you're going to get stomped, because the people on the way, because in the gyms, there's like a number of trainers, then there's the gym leader. The trainers have random Pokemon of equivalent value. Sometimes, if they have like what's called a semi-legendary, I don't know what all this means, Hunter explained this to me, so if they have like what's considered to be like a semi-legendary, well, they could just get a legendary in place of that because it's considered to be equivalent value. So one of the trainers just whipped out a fucking legendary against me, and I'm like, oh my god, like I was not ready for it. I'm like, okay, so I had to... No joke, this is what I did. So each Pokemon has 4 abilities. They have MP, it's called PP. I don't know, Pokemon power, I guess. I don't know. But anyways, they have PP that values for each one of their abilities. And as soon as that PP runs out, they can no longer use that ability. At the end of it, if they run out of all PP and all their abilities, they do what's called struggle, where they basically just throw their body at you and they take damage in the process. to beat the legendary, I had to literally heal my Pokemon until he ran out of PP on four abilities with an average PP power of like 10 to 15. So somewhere between 40 and 60 moves, I survived by just healing my Pokemon with potions, which have a limited quantity and a cost to them when I have very limited funding, over and over and over until he ran out of PP and all he did was struggle himself to death. That's what I had to do. And it was insane. It was like a 30-minute fight with just one Pokemon. Which
it was a 30-minute fight.
It was a 30-minute fight of me just fucking healing my Pokemon over and over and over. And just this guy's just throwing his body at me. And I'm like, stop. Like, let me just heal. And I'm just like, if he crits, I'm dead. So.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I lost some really, I was really sad. I lost some pretty good Pokemon along the way. And then when I got to the Elite Four. So the Elite Four are, again, five badass trainers who have super high level Pokemon. They generally just have the most ridiculous things. There's an ability called Rollout. I almost wiped. And when I call it a wipe, that means I almost lost all my Pokemon to one fight. And if I lose all my Pokemon, I have to start over, right? Because if I lose six high level Pokemon, I have to go to my bank and withdraw all the garbage Pokemon that I've been putting in there in hopes that I can build another party. And good luck building a party after wiping. It's basically impossible. So there's an ability called Rollout. And what it does is over five turns, it ramps up damage. So let's say it does 2 damage, then 4 damage, then 8, 16, 32. It doubles up to 5 times. And it can be super effective, which means it does even more damage. It can also, I think it can crit. So what ends up happening is, in a lot of cases, I know Rollout's coming because there are specific Pokemon that do it. So I pull out a Pokemon that I know can beat it. I swing, miss, and I'm like, oh shit. He rolls out, it does like a third of my Pokemon's health. And I'm like, okay, if he hits me again, I'm probably dead. So I'm gonna try and kill him first. I swing, I miss again. He hits me, I live with 5% health. Now, I have a decision. Do I heal that Pokemon to full? Well, it's probably gonna die anyways, right? Because Rollout is ramping up. It's doubling every single time. So I either keep that Pokemon out, heal them, they're still dead, and then switch out another Pokemon, but guess what? He's still in Rollout. So the next time I pull out a Pokemon, he's going to roll out again and kill my next Pokemon. And then guess what? I'm going to pull out another Pokemon and get rolled out for the third or for the fifth time, and it's going to one-shot my last Pokemon. So what I did in that circumstance is I threw trash. I was just chucking garbage in the fucking field, just hoping that he would eat him up, and he did. So he basically burned his Rollouts on a Pokemon that I didn't care about as much, and nice. Then I ultimately killed him.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so you have to basically react to this on the fly. So there's a lot of strategy to it. There's a lot of bullshit to it, but there's a lot of strategy to it. And it was very fun because throughout the game, you're like, okay, I have a bunch of water types. I have no electric types. I really need electric Pokemon. So and again, it's randomized. So you have to be very strategic. So at times you're just like running around to new zones, just trying to find new Pokemon. But also you have to keep in mind, if you're too high level, you have to weaken the Pokemon in order to catch them generally. So if you're too high level, you're just going to one-shot the wild Pokemon. And guess what? You don't get to capture it then. So there's a lot of thought process that goes into it. Obviously, there's a lot of grinding that goes into it. It's a turn-based Pokemon game. So there's a lot of grinding that goes into it. And then after you beat the Elite Five or Elite Four or Five, whatever you want to call it, you basically go back through and do another run through of another continent of gyms. And that was just a cakewalk. After beating the Elite Four or Five, whatever, I just crushed the second island. It was just like, I lost like one Pokemon, I think, through the entire thing to some bullshit and just walked my way through. Now at the very end, which is kind of cool, this is kind of spoilery for anybody who cares. Okay. After you beat all the 16 gyms and you beat the Elite Four, Five, you have to fight Red. And who is Red? Well, it's you from a previous game. You actually fight yourself of what's assumed to be you from one of the previous games. He is insanely high level. He has a extremely high level Pokemon. He has like a level 80 Pokemon, which at this point in the game, I was like level 55. Like that's how much of a difference there was. So you have to get your way to him, which the cave he's in can fuck off. It's so ridiculous. The Pokemon in there were vicious. But the interesting thing is, because of the randomizer, again, his Pokemon are randomed, right? So it's of equivalent value, and he rolled really, really low. His Pokemon were generally dog do, except he had two Pokemon that had Rollout. And it came up, and I'm like, no. We're not doing this again. That's the ability I was talking about that multiplies every single hit.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, he does it, and I'm like, no. We're not doing this again. Like, I can't lose any Pokemon. I'm at the very, very last boss. I'm like, oh my God. So I did. I basically just like pulled out a Pokemon. I raised its defense as much as I could. And then I just healed my way through it over and over and over. And I was able to survive it. So I ended up beating him. I did lose Pokemon in the process, but it wasn't that bad. And what's cool about it too is, and I, this is kind of a, it's kind of a cool thing about the lore of the game, I guess. But when you talk to Red, he's just kind of chilling there. He doesn't say anything. You just talk to him and he just says dot, dot, dot. And then you fight him. And it's you from the prior game, which I forgot about. And then when you beat him, he just goes dot, dot, dot. And then he walks away. And that's it. And that's the end of the game. So
that's the last boss.
That's the very last boss, and it's really hard. He's really, really hard, especially if you're playing on a normal game. Now, I will tell you, we're probably going to play another Nuzlocke here pretty soon. If he rolls high, because he rolled low for us, which I was the only one to beat him, I think. But if he rolls high, you're fucked. Like, there's just no way. He can have a level 80 Pikachu, which I know that doesn't mean a lot to anybody, but Pikachu is a really fast Pokemon and has Lightning Bolt, obviously, because he's Pikachu, but it does insane damage, and he has very high speed, so he can obliterate your party very quickly. He has high evasion. Like, it's just, he can roll very, very high, which can be pretty challenging. So, needless to say, we're probably going to do more randomizers and Nuzlocke runs. It's kind of cool. I mean, the randomizing element of it is very interesting because you basically have to survive the early stages of the game with the resources you're given between the items you find, the Pokemon you find, and realistically the trainers that you encounter, because you can't beat everything early on. You can't just A your way through it like you can with older Pokemon games. Two reasons. One, because you'll probably die. But two, when you die, you lose your Pokemon. So you have to be very aware of what you're doing for the most part, which is pretty darn cool. And the last thing is, you have to build a strategy, a Pokemon strategy, off of the Dogdew you're given. If you get a bunch of Dogdew Pokemon early on, you have to build a party out of it,
yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I mean, it's kind of fun when you're using not that great a Pokemon, but you're using them in such a way that they're really effective. And as well, you have a rival throughout the game that you encounter, which mine was named Hunter, of course, because Hunter's my rival. But he has the same set of Pokemon throughout the game, so you can build a party around him. And by the way, early on, the rival is really hard, because he generally has really good Pokemon, and you have Dedeo, obviously, for obvious reasons. So it was very fun. A little anxiety-ridden at times, a little frustrating, because you're just like, oh, I don't want to lose anything. But I really enjoyed it, and I think we did a great job of balancing the randomizer along with the Nuzlocke. So I would recommend it for anybody who enjoys playing Pokemon games and is looking for a little bit of an extra challenge. I would say look into both the randomizer and Nuzlocke, but also look into the communities. There's some pretty cool communities where people have modded the original ROMs for those games and done some pretty cool stuff to make it a little bit more interesting and balanced. So, we're going to play. I think Hunter wants to play Black and White, which I've never played before. I don't know when that came out. I think that's a little bit newer. Okay. But I'll probably do some more runs of Crystal or Silver or Gold here in the near future. Just keep continuing to randomize through it. Oh, by the way, randomizing your starter is really fun too. Because your starters, you know, for people who haven't played Pokemon, your starter Pokemon is really exciting. You know, you generally get a choice of three Pokemon, and, you know, that's going to be your friend throughout the entire thing, which I don't think I lost my starter, actually, now that I think about it. I don't think I lost my starter at all. I lost a Zapdos, which I was really pissed about. I lost it to something really stupid, too.
Oh, yeah?
I don't remember what it was, but... Needless to say, I had a lot of fun with this. This was a great camping activity, especially, you know, at the nighttime when you can't really do a whole lot. But I definitely enjoyed it. It was super fun. So if anybody has any questions or is interested on it, let me know. I'd be happy to send you the links, or I can even send you the ROM that we used for it.
I'm not planning on it, but if I were to play another or try to play Pokemon again, this sounds like the way that I would be interested. This sounds like what would make me interested enough to push me to doing it, but I don't think I would still.
Yeah, it was really fun. If you ever want to do it with us, let us know, because it was really fun to just kind of text and talk shit about it. So yeah. My final party was Gengar, which is a ghost type Pokemon, Houndoom, which is a dark fire Pokemon, Ampharos, which is a lightning type, Slowbro, which is water psychic, and Quagsire, which is water ground. And my last one was Hitmonlee. Everybody knows who Hitmonlee is if you know Pokemon. Such a badass. Oh my god. He was such a monster throughout the entire thing. I just kept pumping him with really high damaging fighting abilities. He almost died a few times, but he had this high jump kick, which has a really high chance to miss, but when it doesn't, ooh, buddy, it hits so hard. And then he has an ability called Rolling Kick, where it's a fighting type again, so if he misses, it says, like, he continues kicking and crashes into the wall, and he takes damage. He deals damage to himself, which is kind of funny. It's really bad at times, obviously, because, you know, you don't want your Pokemon to die. But yeah, that was my party at the end of it. But it was a pretty nasty party, to say the least.
That sounds fun. Sounds.
I want to play again. It was very fun.
Do I have to let you go now?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. What was your? Do you want to go ahead and do your second one?
No, I don't. I'm going to go up my door. I'll be right back. It's really hot.
Okay. Well, while he's going to do that, I'll start talk. Well, no, I guess I got to wait for him to so he can know what game I'm talking about. So here we are. Just me and the listeners.
I heard that.
Real
No, I'll wait till next time, actually. I wasn't sure how long I was going to talk about Pokemon. I feel like I went pretty good time. So I'm still playing my other game right now. Now I'm
Okay.
playing Tactics right now, which, by the way, is still a
Oh, nice.
fantastic game.
Big
Such a good game.
surprise.
Oh, such a beautiful game. It's just so ridiculous. So we won't go there again. So I'm playing Tactics right now.
10 minutes later.
No. Which is just great. But I played Pokemon a lot, and then there's another game I'm playing right now, which I've talked about before in the podcast, but I am probably going to beat it here pretty quick. So I'll talk about it next time because I actually have a
Okay.
lot to say about it in this playthrough. So.
Interesting.
You, buddy.
Okay, well, I've got two
What else you
more.
got?
What?
What else you got?
Okay, I've got one really quick one and then another one. That's kind of more normal length. The quicker one that I have is actually I've got two. I think the one I'll talk about for this time is Gritters. Gritters is a 3DO game. So I'm trying to play, I don't know how good of a job I'm going to do at this. Trying to play some more like N64, Xbox, 3DO stuff because I haven't, those are ones that I haven't played a lot of yet for the podcast. And also, there's a good chance we're going to do some construction on our house within sometime in the next couple months. And when we do, we're probably going to have to move out temporarily. So I might not
Wow.
have access to a lot of my consoles. So I'm trying to play stuff on consoles that I'm unlikely to bring with me.
Okay.
So I decided to go, and one of those was 3DO, was Gritters for 3DO. This is a puzzle game. So the story, not the story doesn't matter one bit, but the premise behind the game is you are this guy who works for this giant corporation, and it's like an evil corporation, and they have automated, basically, oh, like 100% of their workforce, and you were the last actual worker there. And then they fi finally they got to the 100% point where everything's automated, and they don't need a person for your job anymore. So they're letting you go. And then on your last day, when you're about to leave, you get a random note that says something like, "Please help. There's a terrible secret in the basement of the factory," or whatever the hell the place is. So your character is going from level to level trying to get to the bottom floor to figure out what's going on and to save whoever needs to be saved. None of that matters. All it is a puzzle game where you are on it's in 3D, you're on a big plane, and there are all these big boxes, like boxes I'd say like a little bit taller than you. They're cubes. And they roll across the stage in various directions and in various ways. And there are little green pyramids, and you just have to pick up the pyramids and then get to the exit. There's like one tile that's kind of like an exit tile that's really obvious, and then go to it, and then you go to the next level. Well, very soon it gets a little bit more difficult to get the pyramid little things because the way you end up getting them is certain cubes will have a picture of this green pyramid on the side of them, and that means you have to stop it from moving for like a second or two. And what it does is it drops a pyramid and leaves it behind, if it's one of these that has a pyramid on the side of it. And when it leaves it behind, then you can go pick it up, unless another cube rolls over it before you get to it, in which case it kind of makes it disappear and you got to try all over again. So, to make this a little bit more complicated, after a couple more levels, there are cube. There, some of these giant cubes have stripes on them, and that means that you take damage if you block them yourself. And you, if you're blocking one, and it's one that takes damage, it only takes about 2 seconds for it to completely kill you. So, the way you get pyramids from those, if it has pyramids and a stripe on it, is you have to kind of see what the paths of all these different cubes are, block the ones that you can safely block in such a way that those cubes block the other cubes that are important and could damage you, and can also and will also leave a pyramid behind. Wait for those to drop their pyramid, then run out of the way, let everything go, and try to pick up the pyramid before another cube rolls over the square where the pyramid was dropped. And then you do that.
Okay.
And then you do that for the whole rest of the game. It's not very, it's not that good. That's like all there is to the gameplay. And I think it, I don't know. I don't think there's like a flaw with it besides it's just not very fun. Like, I like puzzle games, but something about just standing and like finding the right place to stand in front of the blocks. There are some levels that get a little bit more complicated where you have to, there are blocks that you actually have to push around, and there are different kind of like levels a little bit where you might have to step up some way, this or that, and that kind of changes the whole flow of things. But ultimately, it comes down to blocking the paths of some cubes so they block the paths of other cubes, and then letting them go in such a way that you can pick up the pyramid before another cube rolls over it. And that's the whole rest of the game. And it's just not, for me, it just wasn't really a fun concept in the first place. Like, there's no real satisfaction of doing it just right. It's just, I don't know. Like, I don't know if my description really does a good job, or if it's one of those games where you just have to play it and say, like, oh yeah, this just isn't that fun. But everything about it works just fine. I think it's like, you know, a fine idea for a puzzle. There's like, there are some ways to get through the stages easily, but most of them it's pretty, you know, it is a challenge. And I do like the fact that there are often multiple ways to pass the level, to get all the pyramids past the level, but ultimately it, just the process of doing those things just wasn't very fun. And unfortunately, that's about all I have to say about Gritters.
Dang.
Yeah. So, yeah, not terrible, but just not really fun either. The last game I have for tonight is Blade Runner. Oh, by the way, Gritters came out. When did it come out? I want to say 94. Oh, look at this. 1994, Jay.
Oh.
Oh. Okay. Blade Runner, on the other hand, is a point-and-click adventure game. It was, it's a PC game. It came out in 1997, which is a little bit later than I thought. And I've heard such good things about this game. I've heard that it is a fantastic point-and-click adventure game. You got to play it if you like point and clicks. I do, of course. It was released, re-released on GOG about 2.5, maybe 3 years ago now. And I bought it instantly, and I never got around to playing it until, I think it was right around when we started playing Monkey Island, which, by the way, we need to play Guild Wars soon, speaking of Game of the Quarter stuff.
Yeah. Oh, shit. We better do it quick.
I know. We really need to do it soon. But I think it was when we were starting to talk about Monkey Island, and I was, you know, thinking about point-and-click games some more. It's like, you know what? It's time. I really need to play Blade Runner. So, of course, it ties, you know, it's in the Blade Runner universe, you know, based on the movie. This game is not based on the Blade Runner movie. It takes place in the same universe, in the same city even. But it's not like, it doesn't follow the movie, even though it's just called Blade Runner. You are a different character from the main character. You are a whole new character doing your a whole new story in the Blade Runner universe. You are a Blade Runner. So if you're not familiar with the movie Blade Runner, you are a that movie follows a detective who in this kind of future version of Earth, basically, someone has created androids called replicants, and we've handed off all human labor to these artificially created replicants. They look just like humans. They arguably have feelings and emotions just like humans, but they are like mass manufactured. And what happens in the film, or what happens actually before the film, is that Eventually, these on an off-world colony, I can't remember if it was on the moon or Mars. I want to say Mars. There was a big revolt, and they killed a lot of people, and now replicants are illegal. You cannot be a it's illegal to be a replicant. So there are these detectives called Blade Runners, and it's their job to find replicants. You get intelligence that there is a replicant somewhere, they hand it off to these Blade Runners. They go find them, and they kill them. So that's the basis of the Blade Runner movie. If you're not familiar with it, it's a fantastic movie. I'm a huge Blade Runner fan. And the first time I watched the film, it's kind of one of those movies that gets talked up so much that the first time you watch it, you're like, I don't get what's the big deal. And that's how I felt the first time. But then for some reason, I felt compelled to go back and watch it again. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, this is a beautiful movie. Like, it's not even that the story is that good. The story is fine, but the story isn't even really the main thing about it. It's really the cinematography, the imagery of the film, just like a lot of the drama of it, the way things are shot. That to me is what makes Blade Runner so good. So I'm a big Blade Runner fan going into this. This movie, this game is actually kind of similar in a lot of ways to the movie, in that it's not really the story that's so good. It's the way the story is told. And the thing that stands out to me the most about this game. So the story in the game is there are these guys who came into someone's, the Blade Runner universe is kind of, I wouldn't say, it's not apocalyptic. It's definitely not apocalyptic, but it's dystopian. Everything is dreary. Like animals, most animals are extinct or severely endangered. All like food is very fake. It's always rainy. It's always dark. Everybody lives in a place where water's leaking through the ceilings. It's just kind of a very dreary, but at the same time, somehow very striking, world. In this game, it starts off with these guys entering the place of business of this of a person who sells animals, which are extremely, extremely valuable because, as I said, most of them are extinct or endangered. And they kill the shop. They don't kill the shop owner. They kill. Oh, gosh, I don't remember if they kill one of the a girl who works there or not, but more importantly, they kill some of his animals. And you are investigating it, and you because you think that there's a good chance that these are replicants that did that. And then that's kind of what kicks off the story. It's this investigation of you trying to track down the people that killed these animals. And of course, you know, in kind of the classic film noir style, you end up uncovering a whole bunch of other kind of conspiracies and things like that as you're investigating. There are other murders and stuff that you come across, you know, very shortly. And again, it's like one thing leads to another, and it's kind of like every answer leads to more questions type situation. The game stays. The biggest thing that struck me about this game is how incredibly true it stays to the feeling of the movie. I cannot give the artists and the writers, but mostly the artists, enough credit for really, really 100% recreating the feel of the Blade Runner universe. All of the locations are, as I said, it's like it's always nighttime. It's always raining. A lot of the locations are big kind of giant buildings that you can tell used to have, you know, dozens and or hundreds of people populating them at any one time, but that are almost empty now, except for a few people here and there, like the police station, for instance. The police station that you work at is this enormous building, and there's this one room where you can walk into, and they they laid it out beautifully. It's this gigantic room. You are like way back in the room and you can just see your character like way off in the distance. You're almost like a tiny dot on the screen. And the whole thing is not lit. There's basically no light in the entire place. And there are like four people in various parts of this room, just kind of like, you know, doing their jobs. And that's it. It's like it's like the world had built up these great places and now we can't even populate them like a fraction of what they were meant to be, because kind of the world just sucks so bad now. And that's how the whole game is. Everything looks 100% true to the movie. The music is 100% true to the movie. Also, the Blade Runner soundtrack is famous. It's about as 80s synth as you can get. And it's really, really good. Really emotional as well. They got that in the game perfectly. There's a part where, so you can, one of the places you can go is your own apartment, and you can stand out on your balcony. And all that happens when you stand out on the balcony is your guy looks off the balcony and it plays Blade Runner music. And it doesn't serve any purpose in game, but it perfectly recreates the feel of Blade Runner. I several times during my playthrough, I will take my character there and just let him sit there for a second, just so I could look at it and listen to the Blade Runner music. It's perfect. It's got all these giant advertisements everywhere, just like it does in the Blade Runner movie. Again, absolutely astounding job of recreating the Blade Runner world. As far as gameplay goes, it's a bit different from most point-and-click adventure games. There is no... First off, there's no inventory. There's no process of finding objects and using them to, to solve puzzles and things like that. Dialogue also is not something you use like to solve puzzles. You do have to talk to characters, but not in a way that's like, oh, I got to convince this guy to do this or that. It's more just like, oh, I have to talk to all the right people, you know, make sure I talk to this guy and that guy. And then if I find out something from here, I need to go back to this other person and ask him about it. That's kind of that's how dialogue works. It works for advancing the story, but not solving puzzles. So Okay. You don't solve puzzles with dialogue. You don't solve puzzles with inventory. How do you solve puzzles in this point and click adventure game? Well, you actually don't really solve puzzles in this game, which is kind of one of the odd things about it. The way you advance through the game is really just by going around and talking to people, finding clues, looking around, making sure you see everything there is to see at crime scenes. And then whenever you discover something new, you basically go talk to whoever you would need to talk to about that. And that's how you progress the story. There is one puzzle aspect to the game where, if you've seen Blade Runner, then there's this kind of famous scene where he is, the main character Deckard has this little computer at his house, and he has it scan like, camera footage. And he says, you know, like, go to the left, zoom, go to the right, zoom. He's given verbal commands to the computer. He says, like, you know, enhance, zoom some more, enhance, go this way, go that. You do that yourself on throughout the game various times when you get new photographs or camera footage of various scenes where you need to look for evidence. You get those and you take them back to a computer and you search around on the actual pictures for clues about whatever crime it is you're looking into at the moment. Which, first of all, this is really cool because it kind of recreates, as I said, a kind of a famous thing from the original Blade Runner. And it lets you, it's like, that was a cool thing. I want to do that. It lets you do that cool thing from Blade Runner yourself. You get to click around and tell the camera where to go and tell it to zoom in on stuff, looking for these clues that are going to help you advance the story. This does kind of amount to pixel hunting in a way. You're not hunting pixels per se, but you are kind of just looking around for anything that it's like the developers decided were something that's important to to the story, as opposed to something that like you would naturally think is important to the story. Sometimes it's obvious what you need to zoom in on. It's like, oh, there's this, you know, I need to look at the license plate of this car or this guy's face. Those things are obvious. When you zoom in on them, it'll kind of like do a special kind of zoom in and print off the thing. And that's how you know you found something that you need to have found to advance the story. But other times other times it's pretty difficult to find the right thing to zoom in on to advance the story. And sometimes you might find one thing, but then there is a second thing that you have to find also. So you never really know if you found anything. So that's kind of, that's one of the things that I think could have been done a little bit better. It's giving better feedback on what you should be looking for. Like I said, once you found it, it's always 100% clear. Okay, now I got something that I needed. But a lot of the time it can be difficult to figure out what the thing is that you should be zooming in on to look for to, that, you know, that's a clue of some sort. And that's really the only puzzle part of the game, is looking through these pictures, these photographs and things to find clues. And there are probably about 8 of them in the game. So not a whole lot, especially considering, as I said, that's the only really puzzle aspect of it. So even though it can get a little bit difficult to find just the right thing to look at sometimes, it's not like you have to do it 100 times. So it's not unbearable by any means. It's just kind of one of those things that is a little bit of a flaw, I think. Another thing that you get to do in game that's pretty cool, that's from the movie, is give people Voight-Kampff tests. In Blade Runner, the Voight-Kampff test is a test that they give people to determine if they are a replicant, because you can't tell just by looking at them. And there are these tests that they will give to people, and based on their response, the idea is that a skilled Blade Runner will be able to tell, using the help of a machine, when they administer this test, if this person that they're talking to is an actual human or a Blade Runner. And the way it works is that they ask him all these really sort of pretty random hypothetical questions. And they get in, like, this machine that they have with them is zoomed in on their pupil, and it kind of measures their pupil's reaction to these random questions. And based on the reaction of the person, based on these like minuscule reactions, it can judge whether the person is a replicant or not. So it might be like, okay, you're in a desert and there's a dead snake on the ground. Why is it dead? Or, okay, you are, you're walking through the woods and you see a turtle and you decide to kill the turtle and you cut its head off. Why did you do that? And based on, and it's like I said, just these really random hypothetical scenarios, and based on kind of the reaction that you get just from asking those questions, they're supposed to be able to tell whether it's a replicant or a human. And that's a cool thing that you get to do in this game. You open up your little briefcase thing with the machinery, and a few times during the game you give this quiz to people, and it kind of has like 3 different spots where you can ask them like a very mild question, or a little bit more intense question, or like a very intense question, and you kind of have to do it just right to where they don't just get angry and refuse to take it anymore, but you want to kind of like push them enough to where you get some sort of an emotional response out of them. And then the machine kind of tells you eventually, if you do it just right, whether they are a replicant or a human. Something else that's really cool about this game is that the characters in the game that are replicants, it's randomized every playthrough. So sometimes, you know, the same character on one playthrough might be a human. Other times it might be a replicant. And that actually doesn't really affect a whole lot of the actual playthrough of the game, but it does affect the ending of the game, which is super cool, because you could, obviously it gives it replayability, but it also like makes it feel like more of a real world, where even if you're following a walkthrough, even if you've played the game before, you don't know if this or that person is a human or a replicant. It can always change. And again, as I said, it changes the outcome. It changes the ending of the game as well. There are also actions that you can do throughout the game that change the ending. You can end up being a sympathizer with the replicants, or like not a sympathizer, or you can kind of run off and just like leave everything and go do your own thing. It's really cool, all the flexibility, and supposedly, even on top of those variables, they wrote it to where even independently of whether some of the characters are replicants or not, they will choose to do things differently in the game, just kind of randomly. So other aspects of the playthrough will also be different. So a lot of replayability, a lot of variability, a lot of stuff that just kind of makes it different from one playthrough to the next, which is super cool. And I think that's it. The whole story, as I said, is not fantastic. It's good. But coming from the perspective of a Blade Runner fan, this game, I could not have asked for anything better. This game is fantastic. It's
wow,
a great recreation of the Blade Runner universe. Yes, the gameplay lacks a little bit. There were some times where I was like, well, I don't know. I feel like I've talked to everybody. I don't really know what to do yet or anymore. So I would have to look up a walkthrough. And that's very hard for this game based on the AI having different behaviors from playthrough to playthrough, different people being replicants or not. So that can be a little bit difficult. And so that was a little bit of a bummer, because like sometimes I was just like, I don't know who, like what else to do. A lot of times what it came down to was I had missed something in one of the pictures that I was scanning. I had missed a clue, you know, here or there that I needed to go back and find. But overall, I agree with the assessment that this is a great point and click adventure game. If you're not a big Blade Runner fan, it probably is not going to do as much for you. Because as I said, the gameplay is really different from a lot of point and clicks and not really, really not very puzzle based. The story is good, not great, but it's the recreation of that whole world that they did such a good job with.
That's awesome to hear. I'm a little bit surprised, but that's really great to hear.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be one of those situations where it's a game that was great for its time,
sure,
but doesn't hold up. I really wasn't expecting it to hold up at all, but almost from the, like right from the beginning, I was like, damn, this is fantastic. There are also a couple, especially towards the end of the game, there are some parts where there actually is like a little bit of action-based gameplay where you'll have people coming at you and you have to actually aim and shoot them or else you could get killed. So that's a little bit weird, obviously, for a point-and-click adventure game, but all those parts I found to be really pretty easy and there weren't a whole lot of them. That was just kind of like a little quirky thing that the game had. But yeah, overall, I was amazed by how well it feels like it holds up. All right, Jay. No top fives.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't hear the last episode, we're putting a stop to the top fives for a while, or maybe permanently, or at least mostly permanently, because we started going very, very, very long in episodes, and usually by the time Jay and I are done recording one, we both just want to die. Like, with the feeling we had was, I think we had both the exact same feeling coming into it, which was we're always super excited to record a new episode, and then by the time we're done recording an episode, we were both like, holy shit, I'm fucking dead now. So we think like cutting out the top fives, especially since we've covered about every top five there is possible to cover, we think cutting out those is going to like cut out just enough time to keep us to where we're not just going to like pass out at the end of every episode. So no top fives. So you know what that's time for.
Emails.
Smash Drunk, we take this first one from Father Beast.
Sure. Father Beast writes, "Hello, classic gamers. It looks like I missed being on for the episode where you discussed the game of the quarter, and I had better hurry up and write this before I end up being late by more than one episode. Okay, The Secret of Monkey Island. I first encountered this game on the PC Gamer disc included with the magazine. Back in 2000 sometime, they had what they called the quote-unquote classic games collection, which meant they filled their demo disc with 12 complete games from the days of DOS." I remember
yeah.
Those.
Yeah.
Lots of shareware and stuff.
Yeah.
One of those games was The Secret of Monkey Island. My daughter and I quickly became obsessed with this game. We always made the point of saying TM out loud when reading the text on the screen and giggled incessantly while repeating the jokes in the game. I should note that this was a time when we had no sound whatsoever in DOS games, so we were crazy about this game without ever hearing the music. We didn't hear the full sound experience until the coming of DOSBox some years later. So anyway, I played this game using the Ultimate Talkie Edition. What is that? Well, if you have the original edition and the special edition, you can extract all the audio files from the special edition, and it inserts them into the original version. And this hybrid works in SCUMVM, S-C-U-M-M-V-M, and it is my favorite method of playing both Secret and LeChuck's Revenge. Rob, I wanted to ask you earlier about this in particular, with Blade Runner. Did Blade Runner have voice acting?
Good question. I should have mentioned, yes, it is voice acted, actually. So, like, all of the dialogue is voice acted. Obviously, you can turn it off, you know, if you want. But yes, it is voice acted. And the voice acting is actually, especially for a game that old, it's actually pretty good.
Not terrible. That's good.
Yeah.
Father Beast goes on to say, I am reminded of the three-part puzzles that have become sort of a standard in games like the Telltale Sam and Max games. We start this game with just such a puzzle as you try to become a pirate. I discovered it is possible to actually map the forest maze, but Guybrush won't actually enter the forest until you buy the dance steps from that shady guy in town. You can find your way to Carla this way, and then she looks at you and says that since you don't even have a sword, you can just go away. When I first played, the easiest thing was to steal the idol from the governor's mansion, which leads you being stuck underwater. And when you come up, you have this really cheesy romantic scene with the governor. And just when you're about to come together, she says for you to finish your quest first and walks away. Guybrush then says he has this sudden urge to finish the quest. I wanted to know what would happen if you did that that part last, and she wouldn't have that excuse. Unfortunately, if you do that, you have this lame scene where Guybrush sort of says he must have been in love with her. Sigh. That's pretty funny. One of the greatest things in the game was the cutscene where you go behind the wall and the game plays itself. No, not the red button. The great thing is that all the ridiculous moon logic puzzles are done for you in that section. How could I possibly know? I would need the wax lips. God, that sounds like some King's Quest type nonsense.
It does. That's an interesting observation that he makes, because I never thought about this part of the game being like a ridiculous puzzle part of, you know, some other game. Yeah, and it's like
just,
this one,
just try whatever you have in your inventory.
Exactly. Try whatever you have on everything else and nothing makes any sense. I never thought about this being kind of one of those parts.
What are the wax lips doing on the yak? How could I possibly know that I need the staple remover to get the wax lips from the yak? Most of the rest of the game's puzzles are pretty easy to figure out. In the whole game, the only terrible puzzle I can point to is having to steal an idol from the monkey head to give the vegetarian cannibals. That one is kind of hard. Yes, I know that negotiating for the price of the ship is a pain. It does seem to get everybody to hate Stan. My daughter managed to talk him down to 3,900 pieces of eight just because she hated him so much. And no, you don't get change for the letter of credit for 5,000 pieces. The last thing to mention, he says, is how many shades of Curse of Monkey Island, he says it's his favorite of the series, I was getting. It's almost as if Curse was a greatest hits of Secret remixed. The insult, sword fighting, getting swallowed by the snake is much like being dumped in the ocean, and so on. Anyway, love this game, probably always will, Father Beast.
Thank you, Father Beast. I never really thought of this being so similar to Curse of Monkey Island, but now maybe I'm going to have to go back and play it to see. Also, sorry that we didn't... You got this email in, like, the day after we recorded the last episode, so sorry that we're a little bit late on getting this one, but yeah. Thank you, as always, Father Beast. Good to hear from you. All right, the second one comes from Chase the Night Cleaner. This is our last one of the evening. Jay, would you mind taking this one?
Not at all.
There you go. I'm going to send it in two parts because I don't think Discord will like all of it. There you go.
Chase says, hello, gentlemen. Chase the Night Cleaner here with a for-real email that I hope I can fit into your overflowing inbox. I'm just going to play like I didn't forget to write in last episode, like every other fan of your show, and really lean into this email.
Yeah, that was, what's the word I'm looking for? Inexcusable.
Word on Twitter was no top fives today, and to reach out for life advice. Oh, God. So I'm wondering, do I pick up a new TV to get the most out of my Xbox Series X, or do I save up and commit to those basement renovations I know I need to happen at some point? Well, listen, you're going to need a TV for the renovated basement, so I feel like you just jump on the TV, right, Rob?
I don't know. Well, we don't know what kind of TV you have, Chase. If you got a good one, I mean, you might not need a new one.
How dare you?
Our TV, my TV has crazy burn-in. I really need a new one, actually.
I have two TVs that are more than 15 years old
right now. Damn.
Love it. That's big nuts. Big fan.
Anyway, I think, Chase, we don't have all of the information necessary to make an assessment here, but I might say to hold off and go for the basement renos first, maybe. Depending on how good or bad you're. If you have like a terrible TV right now, yeah, maybe go ahead and up the TV, but I think I'd lean toward basement reno.
Anyways, which brings me to my real question of the day, but first a lead-in. Now more than ever, contemporary consoles rely on visual clarity and the quality of additional devices external of the console itself, 4K TVs, soundbars, decent headphones to help in the heavy lifting when it comes to immersion. My question is, do you care about any of this stuff? And would you rather play one of these insanely expensive to make a AAA games of today? Or would you rather reach back into the past and spend hours playing games that require a little effort to set up? Definitely the latter of the two. I don't care about this stuff too much, in my opinion.
Like surround sound, 4K TV, that kind of stuff?
I have a soundbar that I got recently. That's about the extent of what I have. I mean, I don't know. I am just a very like immersed person for the most part with games, so I generally don't have too much an issue. How about you, Rob?
I should probably get a soundbar, actually, because...
Super cheap.
I kind of lie in between. Generally, I don't worry too much about, as he says, like the external things surrounding the console. Like, I do have a really good TV. As I said, it does have crazy burning right now. I should get a new one. When I say really good, it's probably about 5 years old. It was really good then. Now it's probably about average. Besides the burn-in, it's definitely below average because of that. But I don't have a soundbar, which probably really should get, because the way my experience with things like TVs, soundbars, and that kind of stuff is, I often don't care too much about it. Like often I feel the way Jay does. I'd rather just buy a game, hook it up to a TV and play. And if I don't have the best TV or the best sound, that's fine. But every time I've had an experience where I was playing on a great TV or specifically with great sound, then that's always made me want to upgrade.
For sure.
And like, it's always made me say, not just want to upgrade, but say, hey, it's worth it to upgrade. So I tend toward what Jay said, but I also do have a propensity to change my mind and say, you know what? Like every once in a while, I'll just have this epiphany where I'm like, you know what? I need to up the game on the high fidelity shit.
Yeah, I will say I got the chance to play Hades on my parents' TV, which is a very nice TV. It's within the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And ooh, buddy, that was a different feeling for sure. Now, is it enough to make me want to spend, you know, however much money I spend on TV? Probably not. But at the same time, it's pretty darn cool.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I was like, why aren't you reading? Maybe it's a little question as this is the themed podcast. That being said, being able to play beautiful games presented in 4K in a flat and stable 60 FPS is also a hell of a thing to behold if you ever get the chance.
Yep.
Also, time to flex that gaming history knowledge with a bonus gaming quiz great gaming question of the day.
Quiz question of the day. Wow, okay.
Of this list, which came first? Final Fantasy Tactics, Disgaea, or Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together?
All right. You can't look it up, obviously. Okay.
Kind of Tactics, right?
Final Fantasy Tactics?
Which system did Tactics Ogre...
That's what I'm wondering. There was a Tactics... Okay, I think it's Final Fantasy Tactics. I would say Tactics Ogre, but I think I'm thinking of the Super Nintendo one, which is
that's
not...
That's exactly what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, is this that one?
I don't think it's that one. I'm going to go with
Final Fantasy Tactics, final answer.
Okay, that's what I'm going to say also. You look them up from number one, and I'll start from number three and look it up.
I think he answers it for us.
Oh, does he?
I think. You might be able to argue this one is kind of a trick question, in which case I would say base it on Japanese release date schedules, to be fair.
Oh, come on.
He doesn't actually provide it, so we do have to look it up.
Okay, this says for Tactics Ogre, 1995. Okay. I'm pretty sure Disgaea came out.
Tactics came out in 97, so that already beats
Oh, shit. So it is Tactics Ogre, because I think Disgaea was like 2000 something. Yeah, Disgaea was 2003. Well, we lost.
Case, way to make us look dumb. Appreciate it.
We almost we did pretty good, but we didn't do that good.
That's true. Cool. He says, that's it for me today, gentlemen. As always, thank you so much for all that you do and for this little slice of your classic gaming podcast. Stay classic and talk again soon. Chase the Night Cleaner.
Thanks, Chase. We appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
All right, current gaming subcast. Jay, you got anything you want to talk about?
I kind of spoiled. I'm playing a little bit of Hades again. God, that game is so good. It is just so good. Every time I play it, I'm just like, man, why did I stop playing this game? It is just so ridiculously good. Just so much fun. I can sit there for hours just playing this game for no freaking reason.
When did you start playing again?
Just like a week ago, if that even. I didn't do anything extensive. I just kind of like logged on, did a run, quote unquote, and just got hooked. And I was like, man, this music. I was showing my sister's husband because I was telling him about it for a while. And I'm like, you got to see this game. Like, he's not a huge video gamer. So I was like, you got to see this game. And he was just like, this game is crazy. So
did he buy it?
And then I ended up getting hooked on it. No. He has a Switch, though. He played a lot of Animal Crossing during COVID.
Oh, okay.
Or not that COVID's over, but you know what I mean?
Right. During the really bad part of it.
That's
how I am with Hades, and also lately I've been the same way with FTL. It's like, I'll go back and give that, you know, play I'll for a few minutes. Yeah, then you end up playing for a couple hours. I started playing the new Resident Evil game, Resident Evil Village.
Oh, I heard really good things about that.
Oh man, it is great. I haven't played a Resident Evil game since Resident Evil 4 originally came out.
Peace.
And so I'm definitely not the biggest Resident Evil fan by any means whatsoever. This game makes me want to go back and play the Resident Evil games again.
That's crazy.
It's just really good. And it does a lot of things. It does like a lot. I feel like a lot of callbacks to old Resident Evil games. Like even little things like when you pick up, you know, all the Resident Evil games have the herb that heals you.
Yeah.
When you pick that up or any other thing, it like does a thing where it pops up and kind of floats around in front of you. You know what I'm talking about? To show you what it is.
Sure.
Then like there's this one kind of like, I don't know how long the game is, but it felt like for what was a major part of the game. Well, maybe not a major part of the game, but a good portion of the game. I just got out of it today. You're in a castle. And it feels just like the original Resident Evil, where you're in that mansion and you're going around having to find keys to open this and that door, you know?
Okay.
It follows that format a lot, where you're having to go around and explore and you find things and it's like, oh, this is going to go open that other door that I saw earlier. It's got a lot of that. It's got, it has some callbacks to Resident Evil 2, I think it was. But I think it might be minor spoiler to say, so I'll just leave that as is. There's something else I was going to say too. Oh, one other thing that I didn't really think about, but I heard someone talking about it today that pointed this out is in horror games, there seems to be like a trope almost nowadays where if you go in a room and say there's maybe some kind of like minor puzzle that you have to do to get some important item that's in that room. You do that minor puzzle, you finally figure it out, you get the item, what do you expect to happen? Some big bad guy is going to come at you.
Sure.
This doesn't do that. And it's really, really refreshing to have this to where you're just rewarded for doing the right thing. And it's not like, oh shit, I did the right thing, now I'm fucked type feeling.
Sure.
I feel like something about that, like I wasn't quite processing, but like subconsciously I was like, something just feels really good about like finding the things that you're supposed to find here. And that's exactly what it is. You have this feeling like, oh shit, as soon as I pick this up, there's going to be a big ass monster coming at me or something. But no, it doesn't happen. You just get the thing and you're rewarded rather than punished for doing the things that's going to advance the game.
That's super cool.
It's really cool. It's scary, but it's not like amnesia scary. It is, it's also like some very gory, like not afraid to do like really intense stuff gory. So, I'm extremely happy with the game. I don't even really know what it was that drew me to it. Cause like I said, I haven't played a Resident Evil game in ages. But sure. This one just looked really good and fun about this one. And I was like, you know, why not give it a shot? And it's completely satisfying. I love it. It's great.
That's very cool. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, I've heard really good things about it from a lot of different people. So that makes sense.
Yeah. Big recommend if you're on the fence about it.
By the way, if you haven't watched Invincible yet, highly, highly
recommend. Oh, shit.
Have you watched it?
I've watched we were talking the other day. I've read the entire comic series. It's Invincible.
Oh, that's right.
Is my favorite comic series ever. I finally watched the second episode last night, and I'm way behind. How many episodes were the first season?
I'm just talking about for our listeners because it just came out. So,
well, how many episodes? It was like 10 episodes so far.
Eight or ten.
Okay, yeah. So yes, I'm behind. But it's but yes, it is the show is great.
Incredible show. So awesome. One of the best shows I've watched in a long time.
Yeah,
and it's animated and it's. I hate superheroes. I'll be honest, I fucking hate superheroes. They bore the shit out of me. And this show is just captures me so much.
Yeah, this one is better because it's kind of like an ongoing, like constantly developing story.
It's just a very dark perspective with a lot, and also the voice acting is beautiful. They have some really nice voice actors now. It's got Glenn from The Walking Dead. It's got J.K. Simmons, aka Show Me Spider-Man Pictures. Sandra Oh's in it as well. Like, there's a lot of really famous people in it that I'm really impressed. They've done a fantastic job with the voice acting in it.
Yeah, you should read the comic because it's. Just as good.
I kind of want to. The only challenge I'm having right now is I don't want to read it because I want to wait for the show to be animated before like I read more of it, if that makes sense.
For it to finish, you mean?
Yeah, because I don't want to, because like Hunter read it all already at this point, I think. So we were kind of talking about that. I'm like, I don't really want to do that. Like,
I can see that, yeah. I can totally understand that. But anyway, the comic is fantastic. The show is fantastic as well. Mm-hmm. It's very character focused and not just like, oh, what kind of situation can we throw at the main character out of?
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Their powers are kind of like a second thought. Like, it's not the primary, obviously it is because it's superhero, but like, it's not nearly as prominent as you might think it would be. I don't know. Yep. I really appreciated it so far.
It's great. Mm-hmm. Okay. Got a lot of good recommendations this time. We got Invincible. We got Resident Evil. We got Blade Runner. We got Bobby Kotick.
Ugh, come on. We're going to end on such a high note. Why do you have to do that?
I'm sorry. I had to do it. But yeah, I guess that's it for this episode. Quick reminder that our game of the quarter, we had to remind ourselves of this, apparently. Shit, you know what? Like, we really... Okay, no, we have till the end of June. I was thinking it was the end of this month that we...
WoW comes out on June 1st. I'm going to be MIA for a couple weeks. So,
okay, we got to do this really soon then.
have someone on already.
Game of the quarter is Guild Wars 1. Mm-hmm. If you want to play that, Jay and I will both be playing it. We'll talk about it, as I said, sometime around the end of June. Will be our Game of the Quarter episode where we discuss that. Follow us at Class Gamecast. Send us emails, mail at classicgamingpodcast.com. You can follow me. I am at King Octavius on Twitter. Is that it? Is that all we have? Is that it?
I think so.
Okay.
Under 4 hours. Wow, look at us.
Under 4 hours. Breaking new ground here at the Classic Gaming Podcast. I guess that's it. So yeah, also we are a member of the HP Video Game Podcast Network. Check out the other podcasts on our network. And tell your friends all about us and leave us amazing reviews on iTunes. And I guess that's it for this episode. So thank you, as always, everybody, for listening. We will be back in 3 weeks. See you then.
Take care, guys.